What's up, world? I'm Matt Newberg from Hungry, and this is The Feed. Each episode, we'll dive into conversations with the industry insiders who are leveraging technology to shape the way we eat. On today's episode of The Feed, the Hungry Trends community sat down with Mike LaVitola, co-founder and CEO of Foxtrot, a corner store that lives in our neighborhoods and on our phones. What started out as an online warehouse has evolved into an all-day cafe and nighttime lounge that stocks 1,500 highly curated SKUs from 150 different suppliers. We chat about the flywheel of omnichannel retail, the future of CPG discovery, the role of ultra-fast delivery, and much more. All right, I'm thrilled to be joined by Mike LaVitola. Mike is the co-founder and CEO of Foxtrot, a next-gen omnichannel corner store that powers 30-minute deliveries and 5-minute pickup of wine, snacks, beverages, fresh prepared meals, and much more. The startup has a retail footprint of 15 stores across Chicago, DC, and Dallas, and expects to more than triple its locations over the next 2 years across major metropolitan hubs. Mike, welcome aboard.
Thanks so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, everyone's really excited to dig in here. It's funny, I kind of want to share how we kind of met initially. I chased you down the stairs, down the escalators at Grocery Dive in Vegas, or a grocery shop a month or two ago, which was it's a fun time. And
yeah,
really enjoyed.
It was nice to see some people in real life again. So
I really enjoyed your talk, and you kind of broke down kind of the omni-channel and kind of your early days. But I think it'd be great to kind of start about how Foxtrot began about 7 years ago, kind of as an online-only player, and how you kind of transitioned from a warehouse to a store, and kind of walk us through that story, if you can.
Yeah, sure. So as you said, we launched about 7 years ago here in Chicago. And at the time, it was really sort of, you know, about bringing this really massive industry, convenience, into the digital world, right? And so kind of, as I was, you know, sort of young and moving around Chicago, you know, be in a new neighborhood every year or so. And in each one of those neighborhoods, there'd be amazing shops, there'd be amazing restaurants, there'd be all this sort of character built into those neighborhoods. But the thing that was always the same was sort of this like old stodgy corner store in each neighborhood. And so our idea was, you know, hey, like people are shopping these things all the time. The frequency of convenience is pretty crazy, but the incumbents are, you know, not really focusing at all on what the merchandise is that's, you know, really filling those shelves. And so our idea was to sort of take all of the categories that traditionally drive convenience, so beer and wine and snacks and coffee and all that fun stuff, but re-merchandise it with stuff that we loved and, you know, really had some deep roots in local and in the community, and deliver it in under an hour, which, you know, 7 years ago was a real sort of novel idea. So we built the first version of Foxtrot as this sort of online-only version of our dream corner store that delivered in under an hour. A couple of years in, you know, we realized that customers were coming to us, of course, for the convenience of you press a button, someone shows up with wine and cookies in 60 minutes, and that's kind of cool. But it was much more so for the actual curation of the products themselves, right? So it wasn't just any cookies, but it was, you know, Carol's cookie. It wasn't just any donut, but it was, you know, getting it from Little Goat, or, you know, customers hopping on the app and finding out about the latest, you know, double IPA that was coming from Half Acre or whatever. So it was as much a platform for discovery as it was just sort of this pure utility of convenience. And you know, for us, the only way that we were going to be able to scale and have complete control over our product mix was to carry these goods ourselves. And also just from a business model perspective, as I'm sure your audience knows well, you know, on-demand can be a challenging business. And so we realized, you know, hey, getting the full margin here is probably the way to go. So we ended up opening our first warehouse in Chicago about probably 4 years ago now. And at the time, it really was meant to just be that, just a warehouse for our on-demand business. But because of the way liquor laws worked, you know, we had to license it as a retail store. And so, you know, because we were essentially living in this thing, we made it look cool and designed it out really nicely and, you know, made it a space where we really wanted to spend time. And, you know, lo and behold, the sort of neighborhood grew up around us and, you know, folks were coming in the morning and grabbing espresso. They were having meetings there during the day and, you know, asking to open up bottles of wine after work. And for us, that really kind of opened our eyes to, yes, on-demand is interesting and it'll be the fastest growing part of the industry. But, you know, the overwhelming majority of sales is happening in real life. And we feel like that's the best place to, you know, sort of introduce ourselves to customers. So over the past couple of years, you know, we've been doubling and tripling down on stores and building that alongside our e-commerce business as well.
Amazing. So it's kind of like this like perfect happy accident where, you know, because of the local regulation, you just kind of opened your doors and saw kind of the power of brick and mortar. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, going into this curation set, I know my friend Andrea calls you guys Cast Daddy, curation as a service. Talk about your supply chain and how you're able to kind of provide everything from, you know, the tried and true brands of that, you know, are everyone's favorite down to some of these newer upstarts that people are looking to you guys to kind of surface for them. Like how did, you know, a traditional C-store probably deals with some, I don't know what number of vendors, but I'm sure, or distributors, but I'm sure it becomes exponentially more complex for a player like Foxtrot. So if you could kind of talk us through what that was like to actually enable that in the store.
Yeah. So, you know, as I mentioned, that was sort of the founding insight of the company, right? Like it wasn't getting you stuff really fast. Like I think at a certain point that's sort of table stakes, but it really was about being a platform for discovery and, you know, finding the absolute best in all of these convenience categories. And so what we wanted to do, and what we have done is, you know, be able to say yes, right? So if someone is making the absolute best cookie and it's a grandma who lives in the suburbs and certainly does not have any distribution and barely uses email, like we still want to be able to say yes to that product because it just is the best cookie. And at the same time, we know yet, you know, sometimes our customers love to find all of the new interesting things happening in D2C and in the snack food world, but then sometimes they want Bud Light and they want Oreos, right? And like, you know, no one's made a better Oreo. And so from a supply chain perspective, it makes it pretty complex, but that's really where most of our engineering time has been. So, you know, we carry like 1500 items and we're sourcing from about 150 different vendors, which is a situation. I don't know if I can swear on this podcast, but it's a lot. And so, you know, Taylor, who's my co-founder and our CTO, again, probably 70% of our engineering hours have gone into our backend inventory, merchandising, supply chain systems to be able to onboard small vendors and say yes to them while also, you know, directly integrating with the UNFIs or the Coca-Colas of the world. So to say it more succinctly, you know, product and taste and merchandising drive everything. And we use technology on the back end to make it simple for our stores to actually operate.
Love it. Yeah, I would have never thought about that. And, you know, as a customer coming in, just like appreciating that, you tend to focus more on the front end piece. But now I know you guys have also like done some really great hires from Whole Foods and Momofuku to kind of ramp up, you know, the private label side in addition to, you know, these 150 suppliers you have. Talk about, you know, your food service program and also some of the private label initiatives and how you go about kind of figuring out what to take on as part of that mix.
Yeah. So it's all been really organic, right? So, you know, when we first started the retail piece anyway, it was really, again, just sort of like a warehouse for e-com. But then as we started to see kind of the same people every day, we, you know, realized that what the neighborhood was really missing was a great coffee shop. And rather than sign up a national partnership with one of the bigger third wave guys, we felt it was really important to partner with someone local that we, you know, vibed really well with, which in Chicago was Metric. And that's really sort of been the cornerstone of our coffee program, is showcasing local and getting in really deep with these roasters. You know, as time went on, folks started coming in during lunch and looking at our grab and goes and being disappointed that there wasn't a great sandwich or kind of grab and go salad there. And so again, we, you know, sort of waited till we had the sort of volume and customer demand to do it ourselves. Then we spun up our own commissary and, you know, now are making things, you know, fresh every day and delivering out to stores. That's now really extended itself into private label, where, you know, we see gaps from time to time in the market where we don't see the right product with the right ethos at the right price point. And so we want to go create those things ourselves. So, you know, as I mentioned, the lifeblood of the company is really finding the best of what's out there and partnering with local and all these new cool emerging makers. So it's not like this is going to turn into a, Trader Joe's thing where 90% of the mix is going to be Fox Shop branded items. But mm-hmm. right now it's at about a third, and that feels really healthy, right? So we do all kinds of cool stuff in ice cream and, you know, things like chips. We make all of our own dips, and then, you know, getting into things like wine, which don't say Fox Shop on it anywhere, but they're sort of, you know, that's us finding the like best possible juice we can, creating brands and sort of worlds around these items and then putting them on our shelf. So the customer might not actually, you know that it's a Foxtrot product, but it's one that we're incredibly proud of and get to have a lot of fun with.
Interesting. So I guess how deep are you going on the private label? Are you contracting a co-packer to do it, or you guys are actually operating like those facilities?
Any and all. So at okay. some points we are making it in our commissaries and, you know, sending out fresh every day. At some points we're making it in our commissaries and packaging it and sending it out to all of our stores across the country. In some right. cases, we're doing, you know, co-brands, and then some like the wines, it's even more intense. So for us, it's about getting the right quality product at the right price point. And however that sort of works in the back end, we can be flexible with. But, you know, as you mentioned, that's how we've really been focusing on building our team, has really been all about, you know, getting the best merchants in-house.
Love it. So can you talk about like some of the day parts, you know, that you're targeting with this fresh food program, and maybe the kind of customer journeys of, you know, Sally in the morning grabbing her coffee and, you know, Mike in the afternoon grabbing an afternoon beer with his colleagues? Like, what are these scenarios that you've kind of uncovered of like how, what people are looking for in a Foxtrot?
Yeah. So, I mean, really it's the kind of store that like, you know, myself and the team want to live next to, right? So in the morning, like I'm getting coffee every morning, right? And so the morning experience is really deeply rooted in coffee, right? And so like, you know, I think anyone can go buy a, you know, super pretty coffee machine and make a, you know, hipster looking menu and throw it up. But it's like much, much, much harder to go find amazing baristas and give them ongoing training and doing deep partnerships with local roasters. And ultimately, you have to do all that if you're going to become someone's favorite coffee shop, right? So for us, it's not sort of like lip service of it's a cool looking store that has matcha lattes. Like, we want to be your everyday coffee shop. And really everything about the morning experience is geared around coffee. That sort of then changes around midday when it's all around sort of lunch and grab and go, right? So there's amazing restaurants, there's amazing QSRs out there. And so where we fit in the world is grab and go, right? So like, how do we make a sandwich or a salad or a bowl that lives in the grab and go, but that was made fresh that day using, you know, local and organic ingredients that we are like, you know, stoked to eat 5 times a week. And so that's what sort of drives that, that a midday experience. And then at night, it's all about market and wine, right? So, you know, yes, we sell beer and yes, we sell spirits, but wine is really SKU intensive. Wine is a place where I think people are looking for a bit of help, a bit of guidance, and a bit of fun to discover something new. And so the nighttime experience is really kind of based in wine. And so as you kind of go throughout the day, it's sort of coffee, cafe, wine, and we do a whole bunch of other things, but you know, that's what really grounds the customer experience.
I love all that. I mean, to really utilize the four walls of a physical space and solve all of those needs for a customer and use technology to do that is absolutely incredible. How does the store kind of evolve from a lighting standpoint, from just a look and feel and like a configuration of seating throughout those different day parts? And how have you been able to like kind of shift towards those different use cases throughout the day?
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. So, you know, physically the space is the same, right? It's not like we're like, you know, shifting up merchandising sets. The sort of most obvious thing that changes is the front pastry case. So, you know, it's all these like amazing sort of, you know, donuts and fun stuff in the morning, then around lunch that turns into, you know, our freshly made sandwiches, and then at night it's sort of all of the cookies and cakes and sweets. But it's really like a lot more subtle than that, right? So to your point, it's around what's the lighting, like what's the music, what's the store staff trained on. It's sort of all of these things that, you know, you can't overly optimize with software, but like as a guest, it's the first thing that you notice. And we've really been building out our sort of hospitality team to nail down those experiences.
And I recall like seeing somewhere on your website, like this idea that you might be able to partner with landlords to get, you know, like a smaller scale grab and go Foxtrot, like on the ground floor of a office building. Obviously COVID has impacted that, I'm sure, a lot, but where are your thoughts now on other types of physical retail formats for Foxtrot when it comes to that expansion of getting to 50 locations by, you know, 2023?
Yeah, great question. So the 50 by 2023, you know, that's well underway. And those are really just kind of our core formats. So say those like 3,000 to 4,000-ish square foot stores that are really in the neighborhood. So that'll get us to the 50. And, you know, we've got like 20 something signed up here for the next 12 months and sort of the rest will follow. On the small format side, that's a place where we're, you know, ramping much more aggressively because you're able to sign sort of, you know, bigger partnerships with either in institutional landlords, like-minded retailers, or just, you know, folks really looking to amenitize some of these smaller spaces. Mm. And so we'll have some news coming out there probably in the next month or so about those first rollouts, but you'll see, you know, definitely a few dozen of those next year.
I love that. Very cool. And I'm sure that landlords already kind of, I mean, what is your relationship right now with landlords when it comes to your traditional high, you know, kind of, I would call them high street retail locations? You know, are they putting in TIs for you? What can you share as far as like what they're looking for in a Foxtrot and how they're, you know, curating other retailers kind of around you as they think about the tenant selection there?
Yeah, it's a great question. So yes, like, you know, our deals, you know, always involve tenant improvement allowance. And, you know, there's kind of been some more creative deals structured around maybe rent sharing or other ways. But I think landlords very much view us as a placemaking place. So, you know, it's less so here's a functional market that can sell my office or my multifamily or my mixed use, you know, soda and chips, right? It's like, yes, we do that. But I think what really gets them excited is, you know, hey, Foxtrot has 50 seats and they're always full. And, you know, that's I think a lot harder to execute on is making a space that really feels warm and activated all day. But if you can do it, then it sort of, you know, really is placemaking for all of the soft goods retailers in a center, right? And so you kind of have us, you know, morning, noon, afternoon, and then the sort of larger restaurant groups coming in and not taking up the nighttime traffic.
Very cool. So I think you've described Foxtrot, I think it's like grocery shop, as like a dream corner store that we want to be built in our neighborhoods and on our phones. So I think that's really powerful. I really kind of want to unpack that, you know, and I guess if you can talk about what that means to you, and then I would love to dive into your loyalty program and kind of what you've learned from the online and offline, the customer that kind of shops across both channels. But let's start by like unpacking that idea of the dream corner store that we want to be built in our neighborhoods and on our phones. Like, what does that mean?
I think it means it has amazing products and it's a place that makes you feel good. And so the first one is a function of merchandising, right? And merchandising is sort of an art and a science. So, you know, you can hook everything up to Looker or whatever, name your, you know, BI tool, and they can spit out sort of what's trending, what's not trending and whatever. But I think where we get, and of course we do that, but I think what, you know, really gets the juices going in the company internally is like finding that next great product, right? And like being able to be the first retailer for, you know, either a local maker or someone that we find at the farmer's market or some new buzzy D2C brand launching that's just, you know, kind of done it one step better than everyone else. So when I think about the kind of corner store that I want, you know, next to me, it's someone that caters to those convenience use cases, right? So, you know, coffee, cafe, wine, market, and then has, you know, extreme rigor for what makes it on the shelf, right? Like we only carry 1500 items. We say no to way, 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 way more stuff than we say yes to. And I think customers know that, and you know, it gives them permission and confidence to try maybe some of the more interesting things that they find on the shelf because they know that, you know, it's really earned its spot. And then I think the second part of that is, you know, being a space that is beautiful and designed forward and fits in the neighborhood and, you know, you're greeted with a smile when you walk in, right? And again, that's something that I think is really hard to do and we work at it every day. But, you know, having a sense that this isn't just like a cookie cutter thing that's stamped out, like we could be going way faster if that was the model. But we care deeply about the kind of neighborhoods that we're going into, the buildings within those neighborhoods, and then the team members that are working the store and greeting our customers every day. So anyway, it's a place with awesome stuff that is a lot of fun to be in.
That's great. And I love that, like, in a world of technology, when we're seeing all these dark stores pop up so quickly and sometimes weeks or days, you know, you guys are really putting in the work to really create that experience. Can you talk about how you designed this perks program that seems to be pretty popular, and how you're driving frequency across both channels? You know, how do customers unlock these rewards? What does that journey look like as far as discovering that program? And then what are you seeing them, you know, behaviorally shift towards when it comes to these channels as they, you know, become part of that?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, you know, we don't really spend much by way of, you know, pure kind of acquisition, right? So like sort of the quick commerce model of acquiring a bunch of customers and hoping that they stick around. You know, our acquisition model really is like, can we become your favorite coffee shop? Can we become the place where it's Thursday night and you're going to grab a bottle of wine and you're going to come to us over, you know, kind of anywhere else, right? And so I think that's the place where we really shine the most. So how do you then transition those folks over to e-com, right? Like, it's all got to be about omnichannel. And for us, that means paying with the app in store. So the same app that you would, you know, fire up to get stuff delivered in under 30 minutes or, you know, picked up in five is how most of our customers are shopping in store. So what that means for us is we have real clear visibility into how our customers shop both in store and online. And we're able to build a loyalty program that connects both of those. So the sort of two big obvious benefits of our loyalty program are, once you hit a certain spend threshold, you have free coffee in store. So like free, amazing, third way, I use it literally every morning, and then free delivery online. So we, you know, take away sort of all of the barrier to ordering online and give you some really interesting benefits through the coffee program in the morning for doing most of your convenience shopping with us. And then there's all kinds of other stuff we do with drops and event invitations and things like that. But at the foundation, it's about leveraging the relationship customers have with us in store to then transition them to online.
Love it. And how are you seeing, you know, visits kind of trend as far as like brick and mortar versus online? And maybe talk about like baskets, or, you know, are baskets bigger online than offline? Like, what can you share as far as like some interesting insights you've gleaned from that cohort of customers?
Yeah. So from that cohort, you know, they're shopping with us something like 10 times a month, and the spend is, you know, roughly 50-50. So about half in store, half online. But the baskets are, you know, about four times higher online, right? So, you know, you think, you know, once you get, like, once someone's placing an online order with us, they're, you know, typically adding four or five items in there because, you know, things are priced really well. They're like going to buy it anyway. And, you know, hopefully they're discovering something that's going to make their night or their day like a bit better. So less frequent, but much higher basket sizes. In store, you know, lower basket sizes, but much more frequency, right? So, you know, think about the, you know, price of a cup of coffee and a breakfast taco versus, you know, getting a bottle of wine, something to eat for the night, and then, you know, like a couple snacks to round it out. I think importantly, like, it doesn't really matter to us, right? Like, what matters is our lifetime relationship with customers and frequency. And so, you know, we want folks, like, you know, again, it's how I personally shop, right? Like, I go to the stores way more than I get delivery. But when I get delivery, then I want to stock up. And so when you think about Foxtrot, it's much more of the brand of what sort of we think customers want in convenience rather than any one specific channel or mode.
Interesting. I mean, I think that like retailers are going to have to wake up and realize this themselves if they haven't already. And it's very cool that you guys are really ahead. Zooming deeper into that kind of curation that Foxtrot's bringing, you guys have had some cool partnerships with like some celebrity chefs, and also most recently, Andrea Hernandez from Snack Shot, which I actually sent my girlfriend the other week and she loved it. I guess, like, can you talk us through what curation means on this kind of influencer level to you? And is this really about shipping to home and gifting, or is this going to also touch kind of that last mile customer inside the store and over delivery?
Yeah. So, you know, I think first and foremost, like, we love partnering with people who love food, right? Like, that's the whole ethos of the company. Like, that's what we're about. And, you know, we've been fortunate to have folks like, you know, David Chang invest, or, you know, working with Andrea. Like, we just want to work with people who get excited by all the new sort of interesting things happening in the food world, or can put a new lens on sort of old classics that our customers may have not discovered yet. So it's, you know, we've focused on it first kind of from the national shipping perspective, just because it can reach so many more people, but it certainly comes to life in store too. And so, you know, for us, it's like less about, you know, sort of marketing and more about just like finding people that we really get along with, who we think can like educate our customers through, you know, some specific niche or point of view. And, you know, being the place where people who love food know that, you know, we will go get that weird, crazy SKU that no one else is going to go through the pain to get to introduce it to more people.
Very cool. So like, is it, I mean, the way I look at it, and I've seen like Gorillas doing more of this, and I've seen, you know, obviously GoPuff and all the quick commerce guys are trying to create like these kind of mini playlists, right? Of like, you know, Matt's favorite hits, and this is what you're doing with the boxes now, but more put together as a cohesive curation, right? To some extent, right? Like, you can ship a full box, right?
Yeah. So like, you can ship a full box for sure, like if you're online, but like if you're in the stores and you just like were, you know, stoked about the like olive oil that like Andrea picked, right? Then like you right. can just buy that bottle, right? Or like, you know, if you're wondering what the whatever like water lily pops are, right? Like, you can just get those, and right. it's like called out in the in-store experience, and then on the on-demand experience, you know, again, you can kind of pick and choose what was sort of interesting from the bigger draw. Or if you want to do the whole box, I mean, they're just like really, really fun gifts.
Totally. Okay. So like, what is that going to look like, I guess, as this evolves more into like the shelves and the aisles? Are you going to, you know, are customers going to be using their, are they using their phones as they browse the aisles? Are people greeting them and helping them find these products? Like, what does that look like if David Chang or Andrea are recommending products, and then someone walks in the store or opens the app, you know, like, how are they shopping that set of recommendations?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we have folks, you know, who like see things, you know, happening on Instagram or through our emails, who are then, you know, coming up and asking our, you know, store team members, you know, a little bit more about it and like where to find it. So like, that happens. But I think what's even more interesting is, you know, folks, because most of them are paying with our app and store, you know, they are, you know, scanning the QR code on a bottle of wine and like figuring out why our Sam Dillon was like super in to this like white Pinot Noir, right? Or like, they're like, what the heck is a, you know, whatever, some like new flavor of kombucha is, and using our app, which is our e-commerce experience, to sort of power that content. So the app is, of course, the way that you order things for on-demand delivery, but it's also just kind of the repository of like all the content about like why we are so pumped about each specific item. So if you're in the stores, you know, there's like some folks who are just grabbing their sort of loaf of bread and six pack for the night, but then there's others who are, you know, really there for that kind of in-person discovery, either talking to team members or, you know, going through some of the built-in content to find out more about each product. And then there's all kinds of fun, you know, I mean, COVID's been tough for a million different reasons, but, you know, like, the stores are typically filled with all kinds of tastings and brand ambassadors and events, and, you know, really celebrating these products.
I think it's super important, and really speaks to, you know, what sets you guys apart. I mean, just real quickly on the COVID note, like, have you seen, how is that recovery going as far as like the in-store, and where did that, I mean, I'm going to assume you over-indexed on the online, and then now you're kind of normalizing back to the 50-50, or like, how did that shake out?
Yeah, you know, I think kind of the obvious insight is, you know, anyone tied to delivery went way up, right? And so for us, we kind of thought, okay, well, e-com's going up, you know, retail will probably go down, and, you know, hopefully they sort of net out, and we can keep the lights on, and, you know, store teams employed, and everyone's safe. what actually ended up happening was e-com was way up, but our stores from a retail perspective had their best year ever in terms of same store sales comps.
Wow.
And so when we looked at that, we're like, you know, that's really interesting. And, you know, it was essentially because everyone's working from home and they're staring into, you know, Zoom screens and like, they just want to get out. Right. And so maybe getting that like iced matcha latte was like the one thing you got to do that day, just to get out of your kind of apartment, and, like, see other people. Right. Or like it's Friday night and you can't go out to the bars or, you know, restaurants because you're trying to be safe, but you could head into Foxtrot and like, you know, find like the new crazy Jenny's flavor that you had heard about. Right. And so people were, you know, very much using the discovery part of the product mix as a form of entertainment. So coming out of it, you know, e-com's up again, you know, same store sales comps are up again, but for us, that really gave us the confidence to, you know, double, triple down on the retail rollout, which you're starting to see come out now.
Wow, that's really interesting. But it totally makes sense that like pickup became kind of like a fun, safe activity for people to do. And that like that combined with, you know, the content that you guys are creating created like a fun night in, so to speak. Yeah. I want to shift the conversation a little bit towards, you know, as we're getting to the back half here, towards, you know, what's on everyone's minds, which is, you know, the ultra fast guys. So 1520 is kind of hitting your home turf. You know, Chicago has been mentioned as a city, and, you know, you will be expanding into more cities where, you know, these guys are looking to expand, assuming they can continue to raise capital. You know, I guess my first question is like, obviously the retail strategy is very unique, but like, are you looking at augmenting any of the retail, you know, beyond a certain level of demand to, you know, kind of fulfill that from a dark micro fulfillment store? Or, you know, how do you view kind of the store and distribution network over the next, you know, like 5 or so years?
We're big believers in retail. You know, our e-com growth strategy is our retail strategy. And I think we think about it much more from the customer perspective than the like scale perspective, if that makes sense, right? So like where we spend all of our time focusing on how do we have the absolute best merchandise and how do we create experiences in store and online that are these warm, hospitality driven experiences, right? So like, yes, of course, we have to deliver fast. Yes, we have to have perfect order rates. Yes, we have to, you know, expand in the new cities, new geographies, new zip codes. And like, of course, we're doing all that. But that just kind of feels like, you know, executional table stakes, right? Like what we think is much more important and, you know, what shows up in our cohorts and how everyone else sort of measures customers is this focus around merchandising and experience. So for us, like opening up dark stores just doesn't do much because like you can deliver stuff, but like we would much rather go into our neighborhood, introduce ourselves in person, create this great space that the neighborhood wants to be in, and then let them know, hey, like, you know, if you want this delivered, we'll be there in a half hour, right? Like the message for us is really sort of experience and merchandise first. And from an economic model, it's the only way we've seen to make it work. So that's the path that we're going down.
Totally. I mean, if your stores are already profitable, adding delivery to the mix is much better than starting with something that's, you know, completely brand new on the internet, spending, you know, close to $100 to acquire a customer and, you know, having to, you know, get to break even in a store. It totally makes sense. I guess like from you, like you guys are taking this, you know, brick by brick approach. Like, do you think 15 minutes versus 30 minutes will matter in the long run? Like what is that going to solve? And what does the landscape look like over the long term?
I think you nailed it. Like, what does that solve, right? I don't know. Like, faster is better. Like, of course, like Amazon proved that, right? But like at a certain point, fast is fast. And so what we found anyway is, you know, getting from 60 to 30 minutes, super important, right? There is a new customer expectation. You know, if your model's set up right, you can do that profitably and economically, and it's a cool experience for the customer. Just as a consumer myself, like there's, you know, times where if I know it's coming in 30 minutes, I'm going to order it. If it's going to take an hour, then I'm not, right?
Right.
Beyond that, like we found that like pickup is actually like a much better, but that better is probably not the right word, but maybe a much more used use case, if that's the right word, than like ultra fast delivery, right? So like, you know, I live right next to a store. I love shopping online because I can find out about like why we picked XYZ new wine, or find out about some crazy new ice cream flavor that we just added. But like, you know, it just seems like a real process to have one of our couriers come the like 2.5 blocks, right? Like I'd rather just order it, walk the 5 minutes, get out, get some air and pick it up myself. So, totally. You know, I think for us, we've seen pickup maybe fill the need that the ultra fast delivery service is trying to fill. But like, you know, mm-hmm. these things are all fluid and we'll see how they shake out.
Super fascinating. Any thoughts on GoPuff's retail strategy? I know that they're opening up some of their own stores. I think kind of similar to what you originally saw, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, you know, they are entering markets where they're forced to open up their four walls of their micro fulfillment centers or even acquire a BevMo to get that liquor license. I haven't really seen what those outside of BevMo, like what that experience will look like, but like any thoughts on their strategy there? Do you think that that's something interesting to look at?
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely interesting to look at. And like, I think it all comes down to like, what sort of customer experience are they trying to solve, right? So if it's like, how do we get our customers as muched up as we possibly can, as fast as we can, and we need stores to do it for some technicality, that's one reason. And if it's, you know, trying to like establish a retail presence to be that sort of utility player, that's another one. So of course it's interesting to watch and we'll see what happens.
And I think you mentioned, I think in your talk that like the majority of customers that are shopping with Foxtrot online and offline are within like less than a mile radius of your stores. Is that what you're seeing across kind of delivery and pickup?
Yeah. I think it's for a couple reasons. I mean, one, like we, you know, don't spend significantly on paid acquisition, right? So like, you know, customers way over index close to us because how else would they have heard about us? But also there's like really something to the frequency with which our core customers shop us, right? So like we open up a shop in their neighborhood, they're like pretty excited about it because it looks cool and it feels right. And there's a certain energy there. They then order online. And what we see is the closer a customer is to a store, the more frequently they shop us. That should sound pretty obvious, but you know, like even their deliveries go up the closer they are to a store. When you think that they would go up maybe the further away they are from a store because it's, you know, further to walk. Right. And I think that just all gets to like, you know, which part of the customer psyche are you trying to meet? And for us, it's sort of, we know that there's amazing restaurants and customers are going to go there for their meals. We know that there's amazing grocery stores and that's where they're going to go to stock up. And so, you know, we're really playing in this middle space of, you know, if your pantry's stocked here and you're having your sort of full dining out experience here, like what's this thing in the middle? And for us, it's about, you know, again, having the best merchandise to meet all those immediate use cases.
Really interesting. And that's mostly all this fulfillment for delivery is done by your own couriers via bike. Is that correct?
Yeah, some cars, you know, kind of depends on the market, but yes.
Got it. Well, I guess before we get into Q&A, I guess where I want to leave this off is like, what should retailers do? Like, what have you learned that, you know, you think that retailers don't understand today in this very black and white world of you're either a 15-minute quick commerce startup or you're some like stodgy old big box retailer? Like, what are the takeaways of like what you've learned over the past, you know, 7 years that you think, you know, they can learn from?
I mean, at the end of the day, like I think you got to figure out what you're solving, right? And, you know, for like, from a retail perspective for us, like, you know, like we, you know, feel like customers want beautiful hospitality driven spaces in their neighborhoods, right? And that are filled with products that they love. So like the, you know, like our job is to sort of do all the hard work on the back end and largely with technology, you know, like when in terms of supply chain and training and all this kind of stuff to deliver an experience in store that feels really natural and really seamless, but is, you know, really quite a beast to manage on the back end. But like, you know, customers have a lot of options, right? So if you're not creating the right experience or you start sacrificing, you know, standards around product because it's easier to consolidate distributors, right? Or you start sacrificing design because you can go way faster if you don't, you know, care about the exact building or the exact tile or the kind of speaker. Like, there's a really delicate balancing act there. And it's probably the difference of building for, you know, super scale in the short term versus having a longer term outlook on what the brand can be.
Love it. I love the thoughtfulness and, you know, doing the hard work and having that pay off in the long run. I think it's an interesting insight. So I'd love to transition over to Q&A. We got a couple questions coming in here. Feel free to jump in the chat. First up, we got, how much of the merchandising curation is done via tech versus human taste? And I will say, I would love to be one of your human taste testers, whatever you want to call them. I'm sure you get to see a lot of interesting local brands and lots of nice snacks around the office. But anyway, how much of that is tech and how much of that is, you know, just good old human taste?
Yeah, man. And I'd say, like, you know, everything's hard. Startups are hard. Growing companies hard. Everything's hard. Like, retail's hard. It's all hard. The like one thing that keeps us in check is that the office is just flooded with like amazing, I mean, cookies and ice creams and snacks and wine. Like, it's a good kind of grounding to be like, it's all good. How much is tech and how much is, you know, like I said, it's an art and a science. The science is not all that hard, right? Like, you can download Spins data, you can pivot out your own data, you can discover trends and insights. Like, you know, that's all stuff that, you know, smart folks can do. I think the much harder thing is the stuff that's not showing up in the Spins data, that's not showing up in other retailers. And that's the stuff that we take a ton of pride in, right? So, like, going and finding really non-obvious things that we are super, super passionate about and taking a risk on those items. So I'd say, like, the sort of like tech part is table stakes, but I think that the things that people get the most excited about from a customer perspective are kind of those weirder, more out there ideas that we're drawing inspiration from and putting on our shelves.
And how does that, like, vary market to market? Like, are you centralizing all of that across the entire East, you know, markets you currently serve? Do you think that that's going to eventually shift towards something where you have DC curators that are different than their Dallas curators? Or like, how will that evolve and where is it right now?
Yeah, I mean, those are the good jobs. Though I joke with our relationship team all the time, like, I would love to just, like, give someone else a CEO job and go take that job of just beating our local curators. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, we're in market all the time, like constantly. Like, I'm in market, our merchandising teams are, our store managers in those teams, our team members there, customers there. Like, we have a really, really big pipeline to finding those, like, highly, highly local items, right? And, like, our favorite ones are typically items that, like, you know, whatever, restaurants or sort of small, you know, artisans, like, never even thought about putting in to retail because the thought of trying to get into Whole Foods or whatever just seems really, really daunting. So, all to say, like, it's an active and lively part of the org.
Great. Going on to the next question. How do you go about creating private label products without upsetting your existing suppliers? I feel like I know the answer to this question, but you feel free to jump in.
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, like, and as I said off the top, like, we are not trying to be Trader Joe's. I mean, Trader Joe's is amazing, but why we started the company was, like, finding all of these amazing makers and giving them a retail platform. So for us, private label is either about commodity items that, you know, we know sort of the best manufacturers of, and we don't think people have a lot of brand loyalty to, and we can ultimately deliver a great tasting product at a lower price point and sort of deliver value to customers that way. Or on the other end of the spectrum, you know, it's filling in gaps that we see in the market that, like, no one's hitting, right? So that could be a certain price point, that could be a certain taste profile, that could be whatever. But we're, I think, humble enough to know that there's a lot of amazing CPG brands out there, and that's all they focus on. And so we would rather partner than make it ourselves. But in the case where we can't, we're happy to do it.
Totally. You're not going to, you know, pull an Amazon and leverage your data to go and build an Amazon Basics. It would be a much higher quality than Amazon Basics if it's Fox Shop. But, like, the Amazon Basics model is like, oh, this is successful, let's go knock it off and do it, you know, and
yeah,
make
and
more,
like,
margin.
We could do that, and we could do the Trader Joe's model. But, like, I think, you know, customers like really like Fox Shop because they know that, like, they can come into the store and find out about a whole bunch of new brands from across the country that like they hadn't heard about before. So that mm-hmm. element of discovery is super important.
We got another question coming in here. Do you think traditional grocers are catching up on the tech part and customer value prop? How do you differentiate?
Catching on the tech part? Maybe. I don't know. They seem like they're investing a lot and they've got very smart people. I just think the systems are so crazy complex and so legacy. I mean, that's an obvious statement. Like, it just seems like it's a lot. On the experience part, yeah, I think some of them are turning into mini restaurants. They have bars. They have those kinds of things. I think very specifically, we are not a grocery store. Like, grocery stores have 50,000 SKUs. We have 1,500, and so we focus a lot more about what the corner store used to be, which was this general store that's filling immediate needs in neighborhoods, right? So I go grocery shopping every Sunday, right? And we stock up on stuff for the week. So Fox Truck's not replacing grocery, but it is sort of filling this void that I think exists with consumers now of the in-between of grocery and restaurant shopping. So I just really think it's a different use case.
Right. It's the top off the, Americans, I guess pre-COVID did over 2 trips to the grocery store per week. One of those, 1 to 2 of those is a supplemental trip to get the odd spice or whatnot. That's where you guys are.
And then, because the format's smaller, we can get much, much closer, physically closer to customers and open more within a city as well.
So one of the questions that came to my mind as you were describing kind of the curation part was, is there a good story you had a case study of a brand that came to you that was super, super small, cottage, and you took them through the phase, that next phase of growth that they needed to kind of break out? And how did that that evolution come about?
Yeah. I mean, probably dozens of them, and it's why we formalized it in our up and comers program, which is, relaunching here in a month or two. But, I think about a brand like Momo Shack down in Dallas. So we, found this team at a farmer's market. They had the most amazing dumplings ever. They're incredible. Super, super young team. Again, just like the farmer's market, we tasted them and we're like, these things are amazing. They're better than anything else we have in the freezer. And we've got to figure out a way to work with them, right? But they never thought about being in retail. They were just trying to sell these dumplings at the farmer's market. And so we were able to work with them on packaging, on pricing, on go-to-market, on branding, a whole host of other things, launched them in our stores down in Dallas. They instantly were the top selling thing besides ice cream in all of our freezers. We then got them into more of a nationwide rollout, and now they're going into other retailers, right? So, it's this really fun story of, spotting talent early. It's almost like a scouting program, right? And believing in some of these brands, giving them help, giving them shelf space, not giving it to them, they're earning it, right? By way of our customers voting with their dollars, and then being able to be an early part of their story where they can then go on, get bigger, and sort of, build their businesses. So there's a lot of examples like that, but that again is what really gets a team excited.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that's what people are really looking to you guys towards. It's that kind of, that level of visibility into what's out there and having your tentacles out in the farmers markets, out in the streets, trying to figure out the next big thing. So that's really awesome. As we kind of wrap up here, want to give you the chance to, plug Foxtrot's locations, how people can, order from you, where they can walk in the store, where they can expect to shop from you over the next year as you start to roll out. This is your moment to plug away.
Yeah. So if you are in Chicago or Dallas or Washington, D.C., definitely come visit us. We just opened store 15 and we've got another couple opening this year. And, next year we're opening at least 3 new national markets. So as soon as we're announcing those, we'll let you know. And then for everyone else, hop on to foxtrotco.com. We have our Foxtrot Anywhere program, which is really a curation of all of the stuff that we are most excited about in our stores right now. And they're all bundled up and available to be delivered anywhere across the country.
Awesome. Yeah, I can definitely vouch for the gift boxes. They make great holiday gifts. So definitely check out those snack shot boxes and these other gift boxes. They make really nice, delightful gifts for your loved ones. Yeah. Nice confetti and other things. We get someone in the audience saying plus one for the snack shot boxes. I agree. Biased because our brand is in that one. Oh, okay.
There you go.
All right, Mike. Well, this has been a pleasure. I'm, dying to get one of these out here in LA. So I'll be, I hope you will invite me to the Foxtrot opening when you get to LA. And looking forward to coming to Chicago and having some breakfast migas or something soon. So thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, that all sounds great. Looking forward to it.
Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. And if you're curious to get a firsthand look at the cutting edge of food and tech, check out hungry.tv. That's Hungry with No You, where you can join in on live conversations like these or sign up for the free weekly newsletter.